What's up, everybody? This is Joel Barsky with the Ivy Chat Podcast. Our guest today is stand-up comic Alonzo Bowden. He was first introduced to America when he won Season 3 of Last Comic Standing. Since then, he's released 7 albums and 4 stand-up specials, including his latest, Heavy Lightweight, which you can find on Amazon Prime. He's based out of Los Angeles, and we thought to give him a call just for a chat. Listen to us talk about his Who's Paying Attention podcast, him playing a role on the show The Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and much more. So enjoy our Ivy Chat as we say what's up to Alonzo Bowden. Alonzo Bowden, what's up, man? How you doing?
All right, Joel, what's going on?
I'm great, man. I know you're based in Los Angeles and you've been pretty busy now. So how's the corona situation been for you?
Well, it's oddly creative, you know. We've had to figure out how to do shows through Zoom, like I'm talking to you now, and live streams. And I have done shows in parking lots. I've done drive-ins. I've done rooftops. And occasionally, actually, in comedy clubs with limited capacity. So, I mean, I've been fine as far as health goes. But work-wise, yeah, it's a creative time trying to find ways to work.
Are you enjoying this new creativity? Do you find it pretty interesting in trying to do different ways in providing comedy to everyone?
You know, people ask what it's like. It's the difference between playing Grand Theft Auto on the computer and actually stealing a car and running from the cops. So we prefer stealing our cars in real life. But, you know, it's just a matter of making the best of a situation. Definitely prefer it live. Even the outdoor shows bring a different kind of energy. But the interaction, you know, comedy is kind of a one-way conversation, right? Like the comic talking to the audience. And the energy and interaction of that gets lost in screens. So we do the best. We make the best of it. I make the best of it. But it's never going to be the same as being live in front of people.
I guess before the lockdown originally happened, you actually had a tour prepared to go to South Africa, which I think it was going to be your first time doing a tour there. So are you planning to go back?
That was my last tour before the pandemic. I was in Cape Town the last week of February and first week of March. So let me tell you something, Joel. It's very interesting to fly from Africa to America, and the first thing they tell you is get in line to get toilet paper. That wasn't expected, but that was the reality. Cape Town was amazing. And I was there when they got their first case of COVID. Because being so, you know, so far from the world, basically, it took a while before it got down there. So we were, two of us from the US and about 8 comics from the UK and other comics from Africa doing this Cape Town Comedy Festival. So we were watching the news, looking at the US and UK saying, wow, it's getting strange back home, you know. So we left there not knowing what it was going to be like to hit the ground back home. Cape Town was still operating normally at that time. And by the way, I tell everyone, I don't know if you've ever been there, one of the most beautiful places I've ever been, just absolutely fascinating. So when the world opens up, you got to see Cape Town. I had a fantastic time.
From what I understand, you've been doing some jazz events right now. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I work with a group called Entertainment Cruise Productions, the key word being cruise. And normally every year we do jazz cruises, different genres of jazz, and absolutely love it. Well, cruising is shut down, you know, for at least another year. So we were doing live stream jazz shows hosted by Marcus Miller, brilliant composer and jazz bassist. And I'm one of the hosts normally on the cruise, and I'm the comic. So I was doing comedy during these live streams, and we did a few of them. You can go to SaturdayNightWithMarcusMiller.com and look them up. We actually have a Halloween show coming up this weekend we did with the band War, which was just great. And yeah, again, it's the be creative. So we can't go out on a ship and do the cruise show. So we were in a studio and we did the same performances we would normally do on the cruise. And again, not the same as, you know, sailing through the Caribbean, making music and comedy, but doing the best we can.
And you're really big on jazz. I mean, I've gone through all your albums, and even one of the albums is during on a jazz cruise. So why is jazz music something that you're really interested in?
It's the most creative form of music there is. Jazz artists are just super creative, super talented people. I love being around them. We get along because, you know, I improv quite a bit of my comedy in the crowd, you know, doing crowd work, or when we're on the cruises, joking with the musicians, talking about places we've been. And they're like, man, that's like jazz solo. You just get up there not knowing where you're going to go and just going with it. And to me, that's a huge compliment coming from these guys and women, some of the greatest artists in the jazz world. So, you know, it's not super popular. I wish more people listened to jazz, but they've probably been predicting the death of jazz since the 50s with rock and roll, and it's not going anywhere. And the greatest musicians, a lot of them, they play jazz and they play something else. Like I was talking about Marcus Miller. Well, he was Luther Vandross' music director for all of those great songs Luther did in the 80s. But at the same time, he was working with his own band. He played with Miles Davis and so on. And you hear that quite a bit. There's another guy who I love named Robert Glasper, who has a jazz trio that, you know, classic jazz trio, piano, bass, and drums. But he also has done songs with Jill Scott and Layla Hathaway and Common in hip hop. And, you know, he does all these different genres. It's a creativity, man. That's what I love about it.
Oh, yeah. I love jazz. I listen to it every once in a while, but I would definitely like to get into it or jump into it a lot more.
I've been fortunate that a lot of the musicians that I listen to all my life, I now know. You know, that's a weird and very cool thing when you've been listening to. Like earlier today, I was talking with somebody about Al Jarreau. You know, I grew up listening to Al Jarreau, the most amazing jazz vocalist ever. And then I got to meet him and hang out and talk with him, which to him, it's just a conversation. To me, it's like, you know, my mind is exploding right now that I'm talking to you. You know, those kind of moments have been fantastic for me.
I mentioned about that one of your albums is during a live jazz cruise, and you have a lot of great albums. And I noticed last year you actually came out with two albums at the same time. One was Historically Incorrect, and another is with your Amazon special that you have with Heavy Lightweight. So why did you release two albums last year?
Well, I actually didn't. What happened, and this is the business side. So I had done Historically Incorrect earlier. That was a Showtime special. And then I did Heavy Lightweight on Amazon. So the Amazon owned Heavy Lightweight, and they, for a year, it was exclusively on Amazon. The production company, Comedy Dynamics, they licensed both of them. So once the licensing opened up on the Amazon special, they re-released both of them on all genres. So you could get it through Amazon or iTunes, etc. So they weren't recorded in the same year. They just released them. And that's the business side. That's the side where my manager and a bunch of other people make money. And I'm sitting there like, wait a minute, what? Who got what? Where do I get any? And they're like, you just be funny and stop asking questions.
Well, and I like that you came out with the album for your special, which people can see on Amazon as well, because I'm really big more on albums because I can like to do my exercises or my walks or meditation. So I can actually listen to it instead of just sitting down and watching it. I mean, that's awesome that you came out with the album at the same time.
Yeah, well, now everything is multiple platforms for just that reason, for just what you said. Pete, just like this, right? We're doing this as a podcast. But we're also doing it on Zoom, so there'll be video on YouTube, right? People, there are so many platforms now that you kind of have to release on as many as possible because people just look for it in different ways, whether it be Pandora, Spotify, you know, whatever. I mean, people come to me and say, I heard you on blank. And I'm like, I had no idea I was there. And that's something that they do now, the producers and licensing, and they release it on multiple platforms in different forms.
You know, if anyone is interested, they can, you know, definitely stream all your albums. And I think you have several albums out, and they're just hilarious to listen to. Like I said, I've gone through them and more than once. Do you have a favorite bit out of all those albums?
You know, Joel, usually my favorite bit is the latest thing I'm working on. Like, I just love creating new stuff and working topical and in the moment. Sometimes someone will ask me about a joke that I did 3 or 4 years ago, and I don't even remember it. I'm like, wait, how does it go? And then, oh, yeah, I do remember that one. I mean, there are some that I've done over the years that I just felt were really funny, and some things I bring back. Other things people remember, which, you know, I love. I mean, we would all love to come up with a bit that became, you know, super viral and got 10 million hits and made you world famous. Anyone would love to do that, but I just keep putting them out there. Back on my first record, you know, I had a bit about being friends with women, and the name of my production company, well, company that is me, is Just a Friend, and it's based on that bit because that was the first time I really got paid a lot of money for something I did, and I was like, oh, I like this Just a Friend money. Yeah. So yeah, it changes, you know. I had a lot of fun when I did Who's Paying Attention, because that was right after Barack Obama got elected, and there was so much great material with, you know, first black president, and his first job was pirates. And I was like, can you imagine? Just first we're going to need you to solve 15th century crime. And then, you know, I always liked that one. So.
And you had the honor of actually being insulted by the famous Don Rickles, who I've always been a fan of. I was saddened to hear about his passing. So how was the experience of just being insulted by him?
Absolutely legendary. And it's something I will always remember. The video, if you go to alonzoboden.com, the video is on my website and my YouTube. So what happened, I was at Just for Laughs in Montreal, biggest comedy festival in the world, which is phenomenal. And he was hosting one of the galas. And I found out he actually asked for me to be on the gala he was hosting. Like, he looked at a bunch of comics. So that in itself is an honor, right? That Rickles finds you funny. And we're sitting backstage, and he just started laying into me. And, you know, to get insulted by Don Rickles as a comic, as anybody, but particularly as a comic, you can't do anything but sit there and laugh and absolutely love it. You know, it's like, Alonzo, that's good. You took a white man's name. So when the cops come, you say you didn't do it. And just, and you know, they're old jokes, but it's Rickles doing it. And yeah, there's nothing like that. That is something you remember for the rest of your life as a comedian.
I would say, like, after his passing, like, for the next couple of days, I was just going through a lot of YouTube videos of just him, like, you know, he was always the guest on The Tonight Show or all the late talk shows. And I mean, even at, you know, the very old age, he was just hilarious.
You know, I was I've been lucky enough to have worked with some of the legends. I got to work with Rickles. I got to work with Phyllis Diller when she was in her 80s. Norm Crosby, another guy, Buddy Hackett. I got to work with them when they were, you know, old. And when the cameras come on, when the lights come on. They're not old anymore. They come to life and they're funny. It's phenomenal to watch. I did a show with Phyllis Diller, and she, like I said, I think at the time she was 87 years old or so, and she's like paper thin and just really, you know, frail. And the lights go on, and there's a guy in the audience in his mid-70s, and she started joking about how much she likes younger men. And we were just falling out because it was like, this is Phyllis Diller. You know, this is, she's not 87 anymore. She's in her prime. She's bang, 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 bang.
Oh, yeah.
And you just watch, and then you think about, these people have been funny for 50 or 60 years. They've been funny. You know what I mean? And like Phyllis, The amazing thing about her, she was the only woman when she did it, even before Joan Rivers, when she, well, Phyllis Diller was up there with, you know, like we talked about Rickles and Milton Berle and those guys, you know, she was the only woman in the business, and she held her own with all of them. Fantastic. So yeah, I was lucky enough to have worked with some of the legends.
Oh yeah. And that's awesome. Going back to Last Comic Standing, where you won the third season, you've obviously been doing stand-up before that. And you actually were on the second season of Last Comic Standing, where you were runner-up. And I was a big fan of you when you were even just on the second season. What'd you do differently from the second season that you had won in on the third?
I was robbed. I was robbed by John Heffron. I'm kidding. I'm lucky enough to have gotten a second chance in a reality show. That doesn't happen often, but yeah. When the way they scheduled season three and brought us back for like the best of, you know, it was my second chance. And I call it my introduction to America because we were on in prime time on TV. Now, I talked earlier about all these different genres, and we do. We have all of these different things, you know, YouTube Pandora and you name it. But there's still nothing as big as network television. Millions and millions of people watch network television. So being on NBC in prime time, more people saw me in that period than were going to see me anywhere else. So that's why I called it my introduction to America. So season three, what was different was I kept doing new material. Now this is Joel, you're a younger man. I don't know if you No, this was before social media. This was in a time, we joke about it, we had thousands of MySpace friends. You know, social media was just in its infancy back then.
Yeah.
So I had a friend, and she would watch they used to have forums. Each show had a forum, and fans would go in, and she said, "I don't want you reading any of that. I don't want that getting in your head. You just do your shows."
Yeah.
And she told me, she said, "What people love about you is you never repeat a joke. You always do new material." Oh, so yeah. During season three, and I love this, I would start on Thursday. I'd be on the road and I'd be writing and coming up with new stuff, reading the news. And then on the following Tuesday, I would do jokes about stuff that had happened that week. And I think the fans really responded to like, wow, this guy is... just, it's always new. And I think that was the big difference with season three. Also, I chopped Ralphie May in the knee. I hit him in the knee, so he was wounded. And then I punched John Heffron in the throat because I wasn't taking chances with him again. I was going to win, Joel. I was willing to take him out.
Well, I mean, I was a big fan. I mean, since the first season, I watched the second season, and that's, you know, my introduction to you. And I was rooting for you for the second season, but I was happy to see that, you know, you won the third season. So, I mean, it worked out.
It worked out great. I mean, the unique thing about being the winner of season three is that was the season that they canceled the final episode. So people didn't see me win, which was just, and people ask about it. It was an NBC decision and, you know, made by the suits and all of that. But again, it was a great time for comedy because it put us in prime time. And there were so many great comics on the show that people got to see for the first time in primetime TV. I talked about Heffron, Gary Gulman, Tammy Pascatelli, Corey Holcomb. And we were all friends. You know, we all stayed friends after the show. I mean, it was a weird experience, but it was a shared experience. So we kind of bonded. You know, what people saw on TV was really 3 months of our lives. And back then, the show had a reality element. So we were locked in this castle living together for 3 weeks, and that bonded us. So it was a great experience. It was stressful for us going through it. And if you'd seen behind, if they ever showed behind the scenes, we fought the producers more than each other. Oh, you would have thought, oh, so this show is comics versus producers. I mean, we would get in the shouting matches over what was going on, but it all came together.
I think it was probably even before Last Comic Standing where you were doing some filming gigs. And one of your first filming gigs was for, you know, a show that I was watching very young was the Power Rangers.
That was my first, it wasn't my first time on TV, but it was one of my first. So when I started doing stand-up, and you don't make any money, you know, in your first few years. So I needed a day job. And my day job, a friend of mine got me a job driving trucks for the show Power Rangers. And this was the first Rangers. Like, I was there from the first episodes of the first season, you know. And I was getting that. So I don't know how much you know about this or your fans know about this. There's a thing called craft service when you're doing shows. And it's basically the snack table. And it's out there all day. You grab water, drinks, whatever. They have different snacks, you know. So I'm just getting something to eat off of there. And a sound guy heard me talking. He's like, wow, you got a great voice to be a monster. You want to do monster voices? And I was like, sure. And that was it. They took me into the booth. And I started roaring about how I want to kill Power Rangers. And it worked into a gig. And I got to do a few of the shows, and I got to be in the movie, a voice in the movie. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
You know, it's a shame that they put you as a monster, because I could definitely see you as a Power Ranger.
Oh, no. I'm twice the size of the Rangers. You know, the Rangers, and this is the magic of television, right? They weren't kids. And the reason, only reason they weren't kids is because, like, there are filming laws, right? So you have to, kids can't work, you know, all day and this and that. So these were, the Rangers were all in their, probably in their early 20s, but they looked like they were in high school. But they were all small. I mean, Amy Jo Johnson was an ex-gymnast. I don't know if Amy Jo was 5'3", maybe 100 pounds, you know. So can you imagine my 6'3", 250 pound, just standing over Amy Jo? Wouldn't look good, Joel. So no. I did the voices of the monsters, and the actual monsters were the stunt people, and they'd put on these foam suits, and God bless them. It would be, you know, in LA in the summertime, we're filming, it's 100 degrees, and they're wearing a giant rubber suit and fighting. And then they, at a break, they just pull the head off and pour ice water into the suit just to cool them off. It was a tough gig. It was much easier to be in studio making the sounds than being in a rubber suit trying to chase a Power Ranger.
And you mentioned about doing voiceover for the monsters on the show, but I thought I heard that is actually something you're really interested in doing, like voiceovers for monster characters. So is there any monster characters out there that you would like to do voiceover for?
Well, I do auditions. You know, voiceover is a tough thing to do. So I do a lot of auditions and I get a few jobs. But what I seem to get is creatures and monsters in video games. And the funny thing about doing those, right, you sign this non-disclosure agreement, because the video game world is very secretive as to what game or what version of a game is coming out next year or the year after. And that's how far in advance we do it. So I end up doing some roar and some fight as a monster. I don't even know what game it's for. And then the game comes out and I've had people say, oh, you're in, I heard you in blah, you know, and that's how they do it. So I've been doing those and I love doing those, but I can't tell you what games or what, you know, what they were for, because they don't really let you know. The script they give you and the characters they give you, some of the names stay the same and some change between recording and release.
Oh, that's cool. One thing that anyone that's interested that they can follow is your podcast called Who's Paying Attention? And you started in 2012, and I think you're almost pushing 300 episodes now. So what got you starting podcasts so early?
So that started with my first special. My first special on Showtime was called Who's Paying Attention? And the idea behind it is the media has changed so much. And again, this is a generational thing. The media used to be independent and they didn't have to get ratings and they asked tough questions. And over the years, the news media has become more of the entertainment business, right? Where they have to get ratings and 20, you know, when you have a 24-hour news cycle, you have to fill it. So a lot of the news is just crap or news people interviewing each other about the news. And it's so Who's Paying Attention is like, who's looking at the real story? You know, Jon Stewart, when he was doing a Daily Show, they said, so many people are coming to you for the news. And guys like him and Lewis Black were like, well, we didn't want to do that, but we're the only voice left. You know, comedians historically, and I love this about comedy, we're the only ones who could speak truth to power. You know, back in the days of the court jester, the jester was the only person who could tell the truth to the king. He could make fun of the king. Now, if it wasn't funny, they chop off his head, which I think is cool because that's a good standard of funny. But comics will always be the ones who are telling the truth. We have no agenda. We're just telling the truth. And if you're stupid, we're going to make fun of you. If you do something dumb, we're going to point it out. It's what we do. So who's paying attention is a call back to that. I wish the media did a better job of it, but if they don't want to, we will. And I do it.
And it's a great podcast, and you're really devoted to it. I think one, maybe a week or two, you posted an episode from your own car right before you, I guess, were preparing for a live show and stuff. So anything that pops up, you're definitely on it.
Well, I'm honored by the listeners. You know, I never really did the publicity and push for it that I should have. It's just something I like doing, and people do listen, and I love that. And when I would miss a week here and there, people would be like, where's the podcast? And I was like, wow, you're listening? So knowing that people take the time to listen means I have to take the time to record. You know, I mean, I have to do it. And I love that. I appreciate that. It's my fan base isn't huge. It's solid. I love them. I appreciate them. And they follow what I do. And I only ask them to tell someone else about me, which I'm asking you right now, Joel. Read between the lines. Tell people about me. But the fact that they listen, I'm honored by that. So I have to keep recording.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Something that was interesting that I've heard you mention a couple of times recently is that you've given props to your mother for the sense of humor that you have. So did she have some type of role in inspiring you to becoming a comic?
Only in being the funniest person I ever knew. My mom would always make me laugh. We could always laugh together about any and everything. And, you know, I miss my mom, but that is the way I can honor her, by being funny and sharing it. And I even joke sometimes about some of the things she said and some of the things she did that were so funny to me. Yeah, my mom was the funniest person I ever knew. And that's something we always shared. She would, oddly, this was funny, she would get very nervous when I did shows. She did not like coming to see me live. She said that was like having a little kid with a dance rehearsal and worrying about them falling down. And I was like, Mom, I paid for my house being funny. I think I got it. I think they're going to laugh. But I would tell audiences, you have to laugh because my mother's here and she's very nervous about it. But she was so, so funny and just had a great spirit and taught me. She taught me to laugh about anything. She taught me there was always something funny in any situation.
I've heard you mention that she's really good at comebacks too.
Oh, she was quick. She was quick, you know. For instance, I give you an example. So, and this is, again, I'm going to get old on you. So in the 70s or whatever, something's in the news about women's lib, right? The women's equal rights movement. And my mother was like, oh, you mean white women's lib? She said, black women are fighting to not work. When have black women not had to go to work? No, I want to not have to go to work. You know, that kind of thing. I love that.
Oh, man. So, Alonzo, we're at a segment in this podcast called What's Your Beef? So I noticed in previous interviews and throughout your stand-up, you actually take a few shots of Florida. And being a Floridian myself, I got to ask, what's your beef with Florida?
Are you kidding? I love Florida, Joel. Next week, I'm going down to Florida so I can vote 3 or 4 times, you know, just because Florida, you've taken over as the weirdest, funniest state. Now, California, we used to be weird, but you guys have taken to the next level. There's, you know, a Florida man, you know about that.
Oh, yeah.
You can go online and just Google a Florida man and it'll tell you what crazy story happened today that a Florida man has done. Come on, man. Attempted sexual assault of alligators. And that's me saying it cleanly. That's happened multiple times. Oh, yeah. That's happened more than once, Joel. Why? What's wrong with you? Elections. You guys couldn't hold a fair election of a high school principal. You just, what's wrong with you guys? Joe, you know it. You know, Florida, come on.
Oh, yeah.
This is the thing about Florida, and this is what I love about Florida. Florida, you guys brag about the cities. You talk about Tampa and Orlando and Miami, but you never talk about what's going on in between those cities. And I've driven across Florida, and I know. That's right. I see you laughing because you know that I know. Yeah, the middle of Florida, what's going on in the Everglades, you don't talk about that too much, do you?
Hey, those alligators, there's just something about them, man. Like, I don't know. Like,
Joel, you're not supposed to throw alligators into a drive-thru. Yes, that has happened in Florida. And you know these, I'm not making up any of these stories. Somebody threw an alligator into the drive-thru. Why would you do that?
Yeah, yeah. You're not lying. There's always something to do with an alligator. Probably every other week you hear something interesting about an alligator in Florida.
I don't dislike Florida. It's just very entertaining.
Yeah, I guess it's something with the hot weather. Since we're wrapping up, is there anything you want to share with our listeners?
Well, like I said, I appreciate the follows. And, you know, so it's Zo Funny on Instagram and AlonzoBowden.com. And, you know, try to stay calm. You know, we there's so much insanity going on right now. It's people are on edge. You know, you got to find a way to get out. I tell people, take a break from the news. You can't watch the news 24/7. You lose your mind. Mm-hmm. Watch some news, then switch over. You know, if you're in Florida, just smoke some weed and wait to see what alligator story pops up, because that's what they're doing down there. Florida's gotten so bad that hurricanes now go to New Jersey. Do you understand? Do you understand? Hurricanes are like, I'm not going to Florida. I'm going to head north, because those, it's just too much.
Yeah, they're crazy down there. Oh, man, that's awesome. Well, you know, I appreciate this conversation that we had. I've always wanted to talk to you. Like I said, I've been a big fan since season 2 of Last Comic Standing. Alonzo Bowden, thank you so much for joining us in Irie Chat, and best of luck on everything.
I had a great time, Joel. Thank you. Thanks for reaching out and getting me on here. It's good to talk to you. Thank you for not doing this at like 6 o'clock in the morning, because, you know, on the West Coast, people on the East Coast are always like, we're going to do it at 9. No, I'm not getting out of bed that early. So thank you for this. And we'll see you down the line. I'll be back. I already did shows in Tampa at Side Splitters. You know, the pandemic never reached Florida, so you guys haven't closed one thing. Oh, yeah. But it is kind of nice to go down there and function. So.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Our Irie Chat with Alonzo Bowden. Make sure to catch the Heavy Lightweight special on Amazon Prime. Follow him on all his socials. You may find more information in the show notes. Please rate our podcast and let us know what you think of it. I hope you stay safe with everything going on right now. To keep yourself occupied, go ahead and catch our chats on YouTube as well. Thanks for listening to our Irie Chat, and I'll see you soon.